crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatolydibop shabadooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Okay, let's go.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, and welcome to Pork Therapy.
This is Mike.
And this is Stephanie.
And here we are again.
Yes, thank you for being in our audience. We certainly do appreciate you. Because if you weren't there listening, we'd be talking to no one.
Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't be talking as much either.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. That's a definite gray area.
We started this, though, just for the sake of talking, right, to each other, and we just said, hey, we could record this, and we did, and that's how the show started.
Well, I think we had a little more of a purpose beyond that. We were interested in relationships.
Yeah, it was topical.
Wanted to learn more about communication and stuff like that. And wow, it's been, 125 episodes or something along, something close to that?
A year and a half-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been really happy that we've continued on with this on such a consistent basis. I like that we kept this project going,
and we've
gotten a lot of great feedback and learned a lot of things. I think our show has changed and matured a lot, right?
It definitely has changed, and I guess I would say it has matured in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gotten feedback. In fact,
we're still pretty immature.
Yeah, well, we try.
Yeah,
a lot more immature off air.
Well, actually, before we get to this feedback, how can people contact us?
They can cup their hands around their mouth, lean out their car window, and yell really loud.
See, I was going to recommend the tin can method.
Oh, well, that would work.
That would work, too. Yeah. But, you know, everybody has their own method, right?
Or you can send us an email at questions@porktherapy.com.
Yes, or you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4 and record your voice, your lovely voice, asking
That's
us a
right.
question. We would certainly appreciate that because, let's see, we've gotten a couple of voicemails and a couple of jokes, but most people take advantage of our email contact info instead of...
I dare you to call us and leave your question.
Oh, I dare you to.
Oh, I double dog dare you.
Oh, well, now you have to call. We should give like a bonus to the next person who calls. Some kind of something that they would really want.
I haven't anything that anybody wants.
Okay, well leave us a clue in the comments of this episode. Tell us what you really, really want. What should we give you as a reward?
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
Oh, tell me what you want, what you really want. Mike, we could replace the Spice Girls.
Wow.
We're so good.
Just about anybody could, actually.
That's true. As long as it was, like, radio only.
That was quite funny that you picked up on that.
Hey, we're a good team. What can I say? We just go together so naturally.
Okay,
so we did get our feedback, our contact info out of the way, so now we can move on to the feedback. And
right.
We, of course, are our show about voluntary relationships and how they relate to a voluntary society,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's right.
Anarcho something.
Anarcho
I don't know what I was going to say. Anarcho happiness, yes. Anarcho... Never mind. Okay, let's get to the listener feedback.
So we had an internet-only show where we asked what you, the listener, think about us advertising on this show, Pork mm-hmm. Therapy. And we got a few pieces of feedback.
Yes, we did get a few.
So,
and they were unanimous.
Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't happen often.
Should we bother reading these, or just summarize that they said?
We can just summarize
it. Okay, so two different people said, yeah, I like the show, and you should advertise.
Mm-hmm.
And this last person said, and you could read these comments on our website, by the way. They are under episode 120.
Yep, right.
And what is our website?
Well,
yes.
It's porktherapy.com, porktherapy.com, but I was going to say, I just wanted to get a little comment in there about that internet-only episode where we debated whether we should have advertising on the show. That episode was really funny. That was one of my favorite episodes in a long time. That was just, I listened to it again, and I laughed. Oh my God, Mike, it was so funny.
I listened to it, and it was funny.
Yeah.
We all let loose with the profanity, because we weren't going to be on radio stations
It feels good to do that sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've been holding it in for the sake of...
For 100 episodes!
No!
No, not 100.
50-ish, 60.
Yeah, 60, something like that.
Anyway, so go listen to that one, episode 120, porktherapy.com. And so some of the comments said, hey, we like the show, and if you advertise, great. I think you should. Mm-hmm. And then one person said, I guess I can say his name because he did it on the website.
Sure.
So Kevin said, basically, I fully support you guys running ads, and here's why. And he describes why. And one thing he said was, some ads will suck. Specific ads... The specific ads and the relevancy to the show... Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. The specific ads are up to you, as any feedback communication would be through other means. But the idea that you shoot advertising down because the method of communication or medium is one you dislike seems contrary to the idea that communication is key. And I disagree with that. So he's basically saying advertising is a form of communication. And the fact that we shoot a form of communication down... is bad, because we're all about communication.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I walk up to someone and shout really loudly in their ear...
State you!
Yeah, state you, you mother stater, you're so fat! That is communication. But it is not progressive or productive or happy or helpful or anything good. So I would suggest that method not be used.
Yeah. Now, and our show is... I would add to that, Mike, I would say our show is kind of private property, so... We can kind of be arbitrary about what kind of stuff we allow on our show.
I don't believe in intellectual property, but it's private in the sense that we make it. We're making it, so we can make whatever we want.
We call the shots. We're the decider.
That's right.
We're the deciders, Mike. How do you feel being the decider?
One of us has to be the co-decider.
Oh, I think we're both the co-decider.
You just decided that, so you must be the decider.
Oh, well, we'll state.
So, back to the comment, how about another form of communication? Oh, so I mentioned that's one form of communication that I would shoot down because it's not productive. Well, how does that relate to ads? If
I didn't know this podcast was in Japanese.
That's a form of communication that I'm going to shoot down. If an advertisement pandered to fear or idiocy or ignorance and sold a product or service that was a con or harmful or...
Violent
or racist or, something I didn't like.
Yeah.
That is a form of communication. You're right, Kevin. But it's one that I'm going to shoot down because it's not productive. It's not happy. It's not helpful. It's not one that I agree with.
Yeah. But he was saying in his comment, shoot it down for the reason that you choose.
Yes.
But don't shoot it down just simply because
it's an ad.
Phrased as an ad.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense to me. Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to say about that. So I guess it's likely that we will have advertising in the near future.
Yes, and if you want to advertise on Pork Therapy, you should get in touch with us. questions@porktherapy.com.
Maybe we should make an email. Yeah. Marketing at questions@porktherapy.com. Actually, that doesn't exist yet. Don't send it.
But it may in the short. We'll keep you guys posted. But if you want to advertise for now, email us questions@porktherapy.com, and we'll put you through a strict test. You know, we're gonna have to see if you're a lizard Jew, if you're if you're talking about chemtrails, if you're a politician,
or if you pay us,
or if you're selling kooky diet pills, right?
Right.
So that cuts out about 90% of the ads that we'll possibly get. So basically,
maybe we won't be having ads on soon.
Well, see what you can come up with. This give us our best shot. You know, if they were like a liberty oriented author or something that wanted to advertise their book, and I like the book, I would totally do that.
Like, we kind of pimp certain other websites. When we have a guest on, or when we talk about them, like nonviolent communication and healthy
about
mind, fit body,
and
or whatever.
School Sucks podcast. School Sucks. When we have Brett on
but
the show, or
maybe we should, you know, something is important to me and you, I think, as School Sucks, and that we both agree with. Maybe we should just start advertising it, or see if he wants to.
Sure.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and actually, speaking of things that are meaningful to us, I have something that I kind of wanted to just get a quick plug in for, and that's the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
What about the Porcupine Freedom Festival? Why? What is that?
Now this sounds so contrived. I was just going to say that it's really fun and that I'm going. And that if you want to go, then you should
what is it?
porkfest.com, P-O-R-C-F-E-S-T.com.
And what
because,
is
you know, we share a pork, right? we're Pork Therapy, and that's for Porkfest.
And last year, we recorded episodes at Porkfest.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
We did an episode about how to convince your reluctant spouse to move to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And we also did another episode about, that was a lost episode,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, the audio quality got ruined.
Oh, it was such
ruined.
A good episode,
yeah,
but
it was,
then
it
got ruined.
It was probably
ruined.
Our best episode, yeah.
It was,
and then we did another one in the laundry room.
It was our best episode.
I think the one that we lost? You don't think so?
You mean out of Porkfest or like ever of all time?
I think up to that point, it was our best episode.
Oh, yeah, it was very good, yeah.
But we lost it,
but that's
can't
not
hear
saying
it.
Much.
Yeah. So what is Porkfest, though? Hey, it's a fun event. Come. What happens there?
Well, a bunch of freedom lovers go out into the woods, and a bunch of mayhem ensues. And
well, picture 500 to 700 people with very similar philosophies on life about liberty gathering to sell stuff without government permission to each other and make food and crafts and dance and drink and talk and debate and what else? Play games.
Engage in debauchery.
And plenty of debauchery. Just look at Big Gay Buzz's dance party from last year.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking of that when I thought of debauchery. I mean, that was really fun. It was a great party, but I mean, Mike dressed up as Sally the Pirate. Oh, I wasn't supposed to reveal Sally's identity. She does only come out once a year, but
She might be done coming out, actually.
Oh.
Anyway.
She's going to stay in the closet?
Yeah, she's going back in.
Oh.
So, what debauchery were you thinking of?
I was just thinking of, well, I guess it's not really debauchery at all. I mean, I was just thinking of hanging out, like, really late into the night, talking with people, spending time with friends, and, you know, people that I care about.
It's like
meeting new friends.
It's like an extended weekend, I believe, but some people like it so much they come for like a week in advance.
Yes, and this year it actually is a week.
Oh, okay.
It's June 20th Crazy. Through the 26th, and it's going to be at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. So
all details are at porkfest.com.
Mm-hmm, indeed, and you have to also get a campsite, so don't hesitate to do that too. But yeah, definitely go to porkfest.com, check it out. Be aware that like it may change your life. You know, this is going to sound really corny, but, like, since I've moved to New Hampshire, my life is completely different.
Ditto. From almost the very day that I landed in New Hampshire, I've been a completely different person.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, we all change and grow over our lives, but, man, just being in this community, even though, you know, we may have disagreements with some individuals sometimes or whatever, we may talk about that in an upcoming show, but...
We talked about it in a relatively recent show with Mike Ruff, the...
The mediator.
Yeah.
Mediation.
The mediation.
I was going to say the mediator, and then I said mediation, and I just...
Episode. Something.
Bleh.
Anyway.
Anyway, but, I mean, just being in this community, being in a place where there are other people who really share your philosophy, and even push your philosophy on some levels, you know, I thought I was hardcore, I guess, for lack of a better word, before I came here, but I got really exposed to a lot of new different ideas and, you know, picked up on a lot of new cool concepts. And I really think it helped me grow as a person and just become happier and better and more free. Right?
I could say that, too.
Cool. Okay. So that's really more of a plug for New Hampshire and the Free State Project. But also go to...
Well, Porkfest
could be the catalyst that gets you to New
Hampshire.
It is
for a lot of people.
Because
you're meeting all the people who want to move here and who already have moved here. And you can see if it works for you,
if you
like the life and the people.
Now, I didn't move here because I heard about Porkfest because Porkfest didn't exist at the time when I decided to move here.
Wow.
Well, I think maybe it did, but it was like very small and it wasn't well publicized.
Right.
And it was like one of the first Porkfest. I moved here in 2006, but I had decided to move in like 2005.
I think the first one was 2004, so maybe.
So,
and that was tiny, tiny.
Yeah,
so.
That was Porkfest Zero. That's what they call it. There's like a little document about the history of Porkfest.
Right.
And they call it, you know, there's Porkfest 1, but then there's Porkfest 0, which was called something else.
That's right.
So, that was way back in the genesis of the Free State Project and back in time, way in the past. But
back in time.
Wow. Oh, I love it when Mike sings. I don't know that song, but...
That's kind of like a mockery of a song from Back to the Future by Huey Lewis. But I was doing the cool. The version where Kevin Nealon from Saturday Night Live sings it in an elevator to Michael J. Fox.
Oh, right on.
So that's a lot of references that no one's going to get. Okay.
Well, cool. Anyway, so we actually have a question to get to this episode. So
very short,
15 minutes
questions.
Later.
Yeah. It's ironic that we're taking 15 minutes just to get to possibly the shortest question ever.
That's absolutely true. So this is a direct contrast to our recent question that, basically like takes up the whole page of our blog. A very in-depth essay, of course, go to our website.
And it wasn't even a question. It was like a defense of his position. But this is
true.
A question, and it's 5 words.
Wow. So do we even need to flip a coin? Oh, you read one word. I'll read the other word, and we'll alternate.
All right. How
do
you
break
habits?
That was so good. That was almost as good as the Spice Girls thing.
Wow.
Wow.
That is what I want, what I really, really want, to read every other word with you.
You broke the cadence there. I couldn't sing my response, but that's what I really, really want to, Mike.
Okay, so how do you break habits, Stephanie?
Oh, okay. This is something I've thought about a lot. How about you? Have you broken any habits recently or ever?
I would say ever. Certainly. Mm-hmm. Not. I don't think recently.
I've broken a habit recently.
What is it? What was it?
I had sort of a diet soda addiction.
I know this. You broke this?
Yeah, I broke this.
Do you not drink it?
I have none in my house.
Wow.
I used to drink it daily, like at least a few, a couple
gallons
times a day.
A day. Well, how'd you break it?
Well, first I decided I wanted to break it. And that, I think, is the first step to breaking any habit.
Right.
So what I did was I thought about it, and I had some thoughts creep into my head, like, I don't think this is very good for me. And then I said, okay, well, why isn't this good for me? Well, I think it's probably harmful to my teeth because, it's very acidic and it's sitting on your teeth, and it's probably kind of like, have you ever seen people put a chicken bone in a glass of soda and it just dissolves?
What? And how long?
A couple weeks, but still.
Okay. No,
I mean, it's very, very acidic. I think the pH is like 4.
I remember as a kid, kids would joke, so I would call it an urban legend, that you could use Coca-Cola to, dechrome a pipe or something like that.
Oh, I think that might be true. Yeah.
Wow. To clean your engine, something. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty caustic stuff. It's like, and not only that, but I had read some other things like, the caramel color contains these advanced glycation end products, which are basically...
Not advanced glycation end products.
Nobody knows what they are.
I have no clue what that means.
It's basically like the stuff that forms when you burn a piece of food. Like basically when sugar caramelizes onto something or proteins get oxidized or, it's a chemical reaction that forms these compounds that aren't easily digested by the body. And they also taste good, by the way. I mean, that's what caramel color is. That's what caramelized any vegetable or whatever is. But I've read that, they actually cause inflammation and insulin resistance, which is when your body becomes... insulin works less effectively in your body. And actually, I was just on Healthy Mind, Fit Body, which is Wes Bertrand and Kevin Costello's podcast, talking about insulin a couple weeks ago. And we'll link to that in the show notes. But insulin is one of my pet issues. And so when I read that about caramel color, even in diet soda, which has no sugar, supposedly causing insulin resistance, and I go out of my way to eat a diet that avoids insulin resistance, a low-carbohydrate diet, I said, well, crap, that's no good. So I became kind of worried about that. And then I just thought about how expensive it was. It's like, if I would run out of it, I would want to go to the store immediately and buy more, so I'd have more to drink, and it would be cold. And then I was just, like, thinking about that, and it was like, wow, that's kind of messed
up. Do you have a rough
up.
Idea how much you spent per day or month or something on soda?
Oh, at least a couple bucks a day, probably. Okay, I mean, it's so almost like smoking. It's a
bucks
significant...
a month, hundreds and hundreds a year.
Yeah. Probably close to that.
Yeah.
I think I calculated something like that. It was at least like 30 bucks a month or something like that.
Well, that's okay.
But still, that's a lot of cost, and it's cost that I don't want to be spending on something that I just, drink and throw away, and it probably isn't even good for me. So, and then I thought about, I've heard all the, so we just calculated that's $720 a year, which is really significant.
That's a lot for one food item.
Yeah. And not only that, but if you add up all the times, like I would buy it so that I would have it in my house. And I'm almost kind of embarrassed to talk about this because I feel like I'm, weak or, easily swayed by advertising or something like that. But I think it's instructive to talk about this because it shows the thought process that goes into breaking a habit. Okay.
Yeah.
You think about all the things you hate about this habit.
Okay.
So cost was one of them. Certainly. And the health aspects were another. And, you know, I've heard the things about aspartame before.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some kind of reasons for not really buying into them. But as a general rule, I just don't think really those things could possibly be very good for you. You know, all kinds of, like, the artificial sweeteners and stuff. And I do go out of my way to eat, like, whole natural foods. So why would I fill my body with a bunch of aspartame? So and I want to reiterate again, I don't buy into the conspiracy theories about it, like that it's causing brain tumors and poisoning people. And I think most people could easily metabolize it and not be hurt by it. But it just, there is like a small amount of formaldehyde that's formed when you consume it, and your body metabolizes it, and it just doesn't give me a good feeling.
I think as a tangent, it's a good thing to point out that what you just said was your body creates formaldehyde in the process of digesting certain things like aspartame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people have said things like, there's formaldehyde in vaccines, and you're putting that in your body.
Mm-hmm.
There's a smaller amount in a vaccine than your body creates by itself.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, the dose makes the poison,
yes,
right? That's
yeah.
the classic
yeah.
saying.
Anyway, go on. That was a total tangent.
But, well, I guess that was all of the things that I realized I didn't like about this diet soda addiction. And also, you know, another thing was that people would say stuff to me. Like, people would see me drinking it, and they'd say, hey, I care about you. Like, do you know that stuff isn't good for you, or you shouldn't drink that stuff? And I had people say it to me in various ways, like, anywhere from, why are you poisoning yourself?
Sheesh.
To, you know, I noticed that you drink that stuff pretty often. Is there, you know, is there a reason? Like, I had a lot of different approaches, but I did get a lot of comments about it from people who I respected and who cared about me and so forth. So that was kind of another thing that went into it as well. So, okay, breaking habits. The first thing that I did in this thought process was just think of every reason why this habit is not doing me good.
Okay.
And then I had those all in one place in my mind. And when I thought of all those reasons and kind of coalesced them together, I said, yeah, this is not good for me. Therefore, I need to stop doing this.
Okay.
Okay. So then I put my plan into action.
Did you weigh it against all the things that were good? Or did you not bother knowing, I like it, that's good enough. Now what's bad?
Yes, I kind of was thinking about the things that were good about it all along.
Uh-huh.
Namely, I would get a little extra energy from the caffeine, and I would like the taste of it and enjoy drinking it.
Okay.
But those were the only things that I really liked about it.
All right.
And when I thought about all the bad things and I kind of stopped ignoring those things and brought them to the forefront of my brain, I realized that the bad things, you know, greatly outweighed the good things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the taste that much that I'm willing to maybe harm myself and spend a lot of money, you know, even if it was completely neutral health wise, which it probably isn't. It definitely isn't, because at least it's bad for your teeth and bones.
Right.
And the other claims may be a little more questionable, but probably there's some truth to them.
Okay.
It would still be really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it would still be something that's addictive, and that's something that I have to depend on.
So you thought about the goods and the bads outweighed the goods.
Yes.
So then what was your plan that you put into action?
Okay, so the plan that I put into action was to not buy any more of it once I
ran out.
All
right.
And I was pretty much out at the point where I decided. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just not going to buy any more. And then I went to the grocery store the next week, and I saw some... I thought about buying it. I said, okay, you know, this is normally on my grocery list. Should I buy some? And then I saw it and I was like, well, no, because of all these reasons that I just thought of, like, it's bad for me. Mm-hmm. It's expensive. I don't want to be addicted to it. So I just didn't buy it. And, you know, for the first couple of days that I wasn't drinking it, maybe a little bit of a caffeine withdrawal. But then afterwards I felt really good. And now it's
How long
like,
did it take?
Just a couple 3 days. Something like that.
Okay.
And now I just don't get tempted, because I'll see it, and you know, I kind of told myself that, well, maybe if I have one once in a while at like a party or whatever, that would be okay as long as I don't keep it around in my house. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, I've gone to a couple of parties since then and I've seen it and I see it and I'm like, well, I could drink it, but it's really not going to do me good. So why would I want to? So for me, the thing that helped the most was thinking about the consequences of that addiction or that habit and why I wanted to break the habit in the first place, remembering what was so bad about it and what I didn't like.
So it didn't sound like it was that difficult, really.
It was not difficult once I had that motivator. It's
well,
a very powerful motivator.
I would be tempted to guess that since it was so easy to quit for you, you weren't really seriously addicted, but maybe you were, and you just put your priorities straight, and that made it easier.
Yeah, I mean, it is a relatively weak or minor addiction. It's not like I was addicted to heroin, right?
And so not only is caffeine a weaker addiction than, say, heroin, but you probably had a weaker addiction than some. Right? There's people who drink 5 cups of coffee a day.
Addiction.
Really? You did? Okay.
I mean, I still do drink tea.
Okay.
So I have...
That's a good point.
I do still
maybe
have
that's
caffeine.
Why it wasn't that bad.
Maybe. Maybe the tea took the edge off.
Yeah, well, no, I was going to say the addictive part is the caffeine, not the taste of soda, not the aspartame, mm-hmm. right?
But my level of caffeine consumption was way up there when I was drinking the soda, and it went way down after I stopped.
But it's not cold turkey.
That's not cold turkey.
Maybe
it
helped.
True.
Okay, anyway, go on. Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could draw an analogy to, like, someone using a nicotine patch or a gum or something. And then they just gradually wean themselves down.
Right.
So I brought up that addiction because it was a relatively, like, weak-ass addiction. But I think that one really common one that people struggle with is smoking, right?
Uh-huh.
A lot of people want to quit smoking, but it's just so hard because it's so physiologically addictive, right? And then, there are other ones, too, like... You ever heard of emotional eating?
Yeah.
Like people eat when they feel sad or bad, and they feel like they're just stuck in this cycle they can't break out of. And of course, you have to eat food, but it's recognizing that there are, unhealthy eating patterns that aren't doing you good. And you kind of have to separate those out from healthy eating patterns and break those. Because you can't just stop eating, right? You can't go cold turkey on that. You know
probably
what I mean?
Not.
No.
Well, you can once.
You could, but you won't last. I mean, actually, as a total aside, I've heard that, like, the prisoners, like the IRA and the suffragettes who hunger striked in prison, they lasted like hundreds of days. Like humans can survive without food, especially if they're starting out with significant kind of fat reserves. They can go without food for a really long time. It's just the water that they have to worry about.
I know a guy who was not fat, he was actually pretty fit, but he fasted for 40 days, 40-ish days, like 41 or 2 or something. So I believe he ate nothing and drank only tea and water.
Wow.
For 40 days.
And what happened to him?
He lost weight and he got some kind of spiritual stuff from it and whatever. And I was with him the day he ate for the first time. And, we went out to a cafe that had some jazz music and he went... Not for the food, but that's when he started eating. And he, like, put a tiny little piece of food in his mouth, like a pancake or a strawberry or something. And...
Well, a pancake's not tiny.
No, a tiny little piece, a tiny little bite. And, like, chewed it for 5 minutes and was closing his eyes and savoring it. It was funny.
Oh, that is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, people that get spiritual... Can ask. I've just never been a spiritual person.
No,
just not never been into that stuff.
I mean, I could see how if you deprive yourself of food for 40 days, maybe you start to go hallucinate or something. Maybe
you go a little cuckoo.
Yeah, you could consider that spiritual. I don't know. But so smoking also relates, or not relates, but one thing that's bad about smoking that's relates to your example is the cost by orders of magnitude.
Oh, yeah. $50,000 a year on cigarettes.
It's crazy.
Especially because the government puts all these fees and taxes.
Ridiculous taxes.
That they say, claim it goes to schools and stuff.
Who cares
even
what
if it
goes for?
Even if it did go to schools, it would still be evil, but...
Well, especially because they're government schools. Even if it went to actually helping injured people, it would be evil because they're stealing your money.
It doesn't. No. It never does. They always claim it goes into these funds to, like, help people quit smoking or, healthcare or something.
Yeah,
you know
what else is... It's like force on force. The government forces cigarette companies to advertise in their advertisements to say, don't buy our cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
That's just ridiculous. Force. Ugh. Anyway.
And people still buy them.
Right.
So obviously it's not working. No, but
that's so pointless.
Yeah, but...
So, smoking.
Right. I was talking about the cost of smoking. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cost is exponentially increased by all these... by all the government force that's put on it, onto cigarettes. Mm-hmm. But even if there were none, you know, it would still be a kind of a significant expense.
Right.
And, you know, of course, most people know that smoking causes lung cancer and just about every other cancer in the book. Funny as an aside, smoking is associated with a protection against Parkinson's disease and endometrial cancer.
Interesting.
But it also causes a concurrent increase in the incidence of every other cancer that there is.
Weird.
So there's always a trade-off, you know, it's a kind of a cost-benefit for everything in life. But I would say overwhelmingly on the
bad.
Whole...
On the unhealthy side.
Yeah, you know, that cigarette smoking is going to increase... It's going to increase the chances that the smoker will become dependent on someone later in life. You know?
Yep.
Like that it'll be hard to pay the medical bills.
It'll be hard to
care of them.
To breathe on your own without a machine. It'll be hard to, et cetera.
Right. And, you know, also a lot of people who are interested in smoking are also kind of, you know, free spirits, I guess, anti-authoritarian, interested in independence. And so, I don't know. I mean, it might feel like, think ahead, Mike. You said it well. It's like it might seem like you're
blowing smoke
doing
up,
whatever
up the government skirt.
Yeah. But then, you know, 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
Statistically, I mean, obviously everyone's an individual, but statistically the chances are a lot greater that you might be in a situation where you're going to become dependent on someone and your independence will kind of be thwarted a little bit.
Yeah.
By health problems. So,
but how do you break that habit then? Why'd you bring up smoking?
Why did I bring
addictive.
Up smoking? Because, I don't know, I've just heard a lot of people around, like, in my life, talking about that recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting topic to discuss, because when you're free of those kind of addictions, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that does contribute to a sense of greater psychological freedom.
An addiction is a ball and chain. Even if you mm-hmm. think you enjoy it, or even if you do enjoy smoking, if you can't really control... your desire for it, I need it now,
mm-hmm.
it weighs you down.
Oh, absolutely.
Or not just smoking. I might have said smoking, but any habit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I...
And opportunity costs, like we discussed on the last episode.
Yep.
Every time you go outside to smoke a cigarette, you could be, you know, not interrupting whatever you're doing at that moment.
Right.
You could be doing something else. You could be warm.
Yeah.
You
could be spending that money on, you know, chocolate or...
or another addiction.
Yeah.
People are addicted to chocolate.
Heroin.
Heroin, right.
So how do you break habits? I guess you had a plan. I mean, it's the same for me. I've wanted to change myself before, and I guess this relates to habits, because changing who you are, a personality trait is pretty much a habit.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, after, you know, something would bring it to my attention. Introspection or... comments by a friend, and I'd realize, hey, this is something that I want to change about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was an improvement. Sometimes it was to stop something
mm-hmm.
that was detrimental, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing was recognizing it,
mm-hmm.
like you said. And then for me, the next thing was just trying to catch myself doing it before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it takes me a couple months or something, a few months, of after I realize that I want to change something, a couple months of basically saying, oh, I just did it again. I've got to catch myself sooner next time so I can try and tell myself not to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just did it again. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So a couple months of just trying to...
be conscious of it?
Be conscious of it. And I would guess that actually subconsciously I'm looking for the trigger without
mm-hmm.
knowing what the trigger is. What
yeah.
I'm trying to watch myself and realize, oh, when you do this, you're about to do that. So stop.
Mm.
So
can
after
you give a more specific example, or do you not want to go into it? Was there like a specific behavior...
Well, no, I don't really want to go into it. I think
okay.
it's general, because I've done this numerous times throughout my life.
Mm.
I guess the first thing that comes to mind is when I was in college, when I first went to college out of high school, I'd listened to top 40 stuff
mm-hmm.
and pop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, I met friends who were into classic rock,
mm-hmm.
and I really never listened to classic rock, and mm-hmm. I liked it. And one friend in particular knew all this band trivia, knew all the stuff that was, and I just told myself, hey, that I want to be like that. I want to be the guy who knows all the music stuff.
Hmm.
So I'd say by the end of a year, year and a half, I somehow became that guy.
Huh.
It was really weird. It was cool looking back and saying, oh my gosh, I wanted to do this, and now I know all this band trivia, and I know who played what when, and I know what albums when, and I knew classic rock, a genre I didn't even know before. It was really cool.
So that's like a change in your life, but it's not really a habit.
It's not a habit.
Yeah.
But I've
but
used
you think this,
this yes.
generalizes to habits.
Well,
yeah.
I think it can. I think everyone's an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very much different than your methodology. So for me, after a few months of just trying to catch my behavior, then I finally catch up to it. And I finally say, oh, you're about to, you know, do whatever. You're mm-hmm. about to eat chocolate again, and it's after 9 p.m., and you wanted to stop eating that late, or whatever. Uh-huh. You're about to do it. And then it still takes me another month or two to actually change the behavior. So I'll, like, catch mm-hmm. myself as an, ah, screw it, I want the chocolate anyway. And then
when that happens, do you ever think about, like, why you decided not to eat chocolate in the first place?
No. I don't think at that point, maybe after a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know,
like,
if I ever
do you have like this inner battle
it.
With yourself where you're like, well, I'm tempted to eat this chocolate, but I really decided I didn't want to because I'd like to lose a few pounds and I've heard it's not good for you, the sugar.
I don't know if I have that battle. I kind of have it now with mm-hmm. certain traits about myself that I'm not looking to change.
Yeah.
Like I eat too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of,
but
tell,
you're not looking to,
no, I'm not looking to change that yet.
Hmm.
But I don't think when I'm looking to change myself, I have an inner battle. It's just a difficult process
mm-hmm.
to, for me.
Mm-hmm.
So during the process, when I'm trying to catch myself and when I'm then trying to prevent myself, I'm not weighing the pros and cons and dealing with a little angel on one shoulder and a little devil on the other. I'm just having a hard time catching myself soon enough. And then when I finally can do that, telling myself not to. Mm-hmm. And then when I do that, I'm done. So it usually yeah. takes me quite a few months to notice and then to catch myself in time, and then to actually convince myself to stop.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the thing about habits. They're effortless.
Yeah, there's
right?
no thinking that goes... Well,
no
there's no
thinking.
Consciousness that goes on.
So, are you basically replacing a habit with another habit then? Like,
oh.
you're forming a different habit, which is the good behavior, instead of the behavior you wanted to change?
I don't know. What about you with soda?
That's a good question. I think... I thought of it as more of an addiction than a habit, but it, I guess that is a habit too. Well, I think that, I don't know how to answer that question.
I think it's probably sometimes the case. Like with, let's see, what's the classic example? I think it's a stereotype that people who quit drinking take up smoking.
Hmm.
Isn't that common?
Mm-hmm. Well, then, yeah, and
right.
and then people say they're just replacing one addiction with another.
Right, right. And
right.
that may be the case, but perhaps it's a change for the better. Hell, perhaps it's a change for the worse for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I broke my diet soda addiction, I didn't look at it as replacing it with anything. I just looked at it as stopping drinking that. So I could have said, well, I'm replacing it with water or I'm replacing it with tea or something.
Yeah.
But that wasn't how I framed it in my mind. It
right.
was just I'm going to stop this behavior that I don't
right.
like.
And I bet you didn't completely replace it with drinking other fluids. I bet you just drink less now.
Probably.
You still drink tea and water and probably more, mm-hmm. but not as much to make up the volume of soda.
Right, right.
And you know, it occurred to me, here is a habit that I am trying to break right now. And we've talked about it on recent episodes, and that is using what people commonly call bad words.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I prefer to say state you, mother stater, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
And that is almost exactly the same thing. It took me quite a while. I've used profanity since I was like 16,
mm-hmm.
a lot. And I don't remember when, but sometime relatively recently, I just realized, you know, there's not, well, actually I've had the thought for a long time that words aren't bad, it's just mm-hmm. how the people is intent. But somewhat recently, I decided, you know, stop using them. I want to stop using them. And it took me months because this habit was so ingrained. It might have taken me a year or so because
mm-hmm.
the habit of using profane words or words that are commonly considered profane,
mm-hmm.
my habit of using them was so entrenched that, like, there's no thought. I would use it like the word like for Valley Girls. Like, oh, my God. Like, he was totally like, oh, my God. And I would use profane words that way. So it took me a
I'm just picturing this. Valley Girl Mike, every other word is a swear.
So it took me a long time to be able to catch myself before I said the word.
Yep.
Because it was like subconscious. And now, finally, I'm doing it and I'm saying state instead.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be a habit for another habit. I'm really doing state because it's a joke.
Yeah, and in a way, it could rate. It could be an outreach tool. You know, it could why be did an you say state? Well, because the state's bad.
State's evil.
Let me tell
yeah,
you
that's true.
So, okay. Do you think this? Were you going to say something else?
Nope.
I'm sorry. Do you think that this applies to liberty and statism? Like, do you think that?
I bet you do.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Yeah.
Well, I totally do. I think. I would say it relates to statism and religion because they're the same thing. Faith,
yes, control faith. Someone wanting yeah, to control
exactly.
you.
Blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say
never thinking about something that you were raised with, never questioning.
Yeah, yeah.
That paradigm.
You have a habit of thinking, or not even thinking of subconsciously agreeing with the idea that government is good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say you, I mean you listeners, but you know anyone, most of the population of Earth,
or even like referring to. Even referring to people in general as like saying things that are really talking about the government, but saying us like
yeah.
we are in Iraq or
yeah.
what I've heard that so
yeah.
much. I mean, that's
our taxes and
oh yeah,
yeah.
you got to pay your taxes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like what? How did it become mine? That's their taxes
yeah,
that they put
they're
on
stealing
me.
Money. At...
Yeah. So I think it definitely applies to that.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a habit to think that government is good and.
Language is important, too,
yeah.
because when you use certain language, you're tacitly accepting certain conclusions. When you say, we are in Iraq, you're putting yourself in that group
yep.
with the government warlords
right.
who are over there killing brown people
yeah.
and stealing money to do it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it upsets me very much to talk
yeah.
about war, but that's one of the most common examples, and I think... You know, people kind of have this tendency to think of things in teams, you know, teams,
yeah.
groups.
Yeah, that's another habit that should be broken, really.
Right. But even using the government's words, like, for instance, I've heard Stefan Molyneux talk, like, last year at Porkfest about language, specifically,
okay.
and about things like calling certain government things, like calling Social Security that, instead of... you know, what it is, which is a pyramid scheme to take money from young people and give it to old people.
Right.
And he had another way of phrasing that was more succinct, but it's like, when you say Social Security, yeah, maybe you're able to communicate with the vast majority of people who have never thought about these ideas before, but you're also accepting a tacit conclusion that this is good,
for the security
this is okay.
of society.
Yeah, I mean, it really is Orwellian if you think about
it's
that.
It's totally Orwellian, because they
the
are stealing from everybody in society and not giving it back to them when they say they will.
Yeah.
And that is for the security of society. That's
yeah,
it's totally
it
Orwellian.
It turns it completely on its
yeah.
head from what the actual thing is 180 degrees from
yeah.
the name of that thing
of
that most people
look at,
use.
Look at the Patriot Act.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I was talking to someone the other day. I opened up a bank account, and they wanted to know some private information
mm-hmm.
about me. And I said, well, why do you need to know that? Well, we have to because of the Patriot Act. And
oh,
it was she.
Just
you know,
doing
I,
my
I,
job.
I kind of prompted her, but it was she who said, the bank teller person, who said, you know, this Patriot Act, they name it that, so if you disagree with it, you're not a patriot and you're an evil person, but there's nothing patriotic about it.
Yeah.
And that's so true with most of government language.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always like the Save the Children Act or something
yeah.
that if you disagree with it, you look
right.
like a jackass,
right.
but you're not. I mean,
yeah.
they need to call it what it is, which is threat, coercion,
you know, yeah, right.
killing.
You know,
even the Department of Defense. How?
Right.
When have they ever been defensive? It's the It used to be called
Department
of War.
Yeah. You know, there's an organization called Downsize DC.
Uh-huh.
Which I used to participate in.
Me too, I used to. I
used
stopped.
To, yeah, ditto.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think any government is good, and they do.
No,
but,
and it's not worth... The federal government is not worth paying... I just ignore
I don't
them
think any
at this
government
point.
Is worth... But anyway, what was
yeah.
I going to say? They did have... they were going to introduce a bill to Congress, I guess.
Oh, to make them read all their
not
bills?
Not that one, too, but the one that I think would actually have been a good idea was called the One Subject at a Time Bill. And when I say a good idea, I mean abstractly. Introducing more laws is not the right thing to do. But
right.
the idea was, if every law that was passed, every bill that became a law, had only one topic, only one idea,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't have 10,000 page documents that they were had to read in 24 hours then vote on, and in those 10,000 pages of, should we bring the troops home, or do you love children, they hide things like you have to pay extra taxes when you buy sugar or Coke and
yeah.
et cetera.
And this state gets pork or whatever.
Yeah,
not PORC, the good kind, the PORK.
Yeah. So I thought that was a good idea. But yeah. Anyway, so breaking habits.
So you brought that up to talk about the language thing, but
yes.
But I think in general, there are a lot of habits that people are left with as vestiges of statism, like maybe you went to government school. Ugh. I mean, it took me years to undo that damage.
Oh, it's government
years.
School. All government school does is instill things by rote, which is habit.
Absolutely.
Memorize dates. memorize numbers.
Yeah.
Memorize procedures.
Yeah.
Memorize obeyance.
Yeah.
Just, it's all, they're just instilling in you habits to obey. That's all.
And we even have the habit, as a matter of fact, this one really relates to liberty. I had a habit, or maybe not a habit, but an ingrained conditioned response, I uh-huh. guess you could say, to feel afraid whenever I saw blue lights
yeah.
in my rear view. Like, that it was a cop, and the cop was coming after me, and that they were going to hurt me. And I had that reaction, I guess, because I had been traumatized in the past, I would assume. You know, I mean, why are people afraid of cops? Because they have weapons and you don't, and they're scary and they're intimidating.
Well,
and
because
dressed in black.
Almost nothing a cop does is ever helpful.
No.
They always hurt you. They pull you over, give you a ticket. They don't come to your house on your spare time with an appointment and give you an award.
Right.
No. They demand things and they hurt you. And
and they do everything they do by force.
Yes.
They don't persuade anyone to do
right.
anything. From the way
nothing.
That they get paid to their interactions with you,
yeah.
they are controlling and dominating
yeah.
everything
you
from
know,
that conversation.
As an aside here,
mm-hmm.
what a surprise. The other day I was driving and I saw a cop car with his blue lights flashing mm-hmm. on the side of the road, and it was at night. And as I passed him, I realized he wasn't pulling someone over.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually out of his car pulling some sticks off the road that fell off a truck or something, pulling them off the road so people wouldn't be driving over them. And I thought, wow, a cop being helpful, that's so rare.
Yeah.
And it is true that's helpful. But like you just said, he was doing it with stolen tax money. He was getting paid by theft right then.
That's true.
It's just nothing a cop does is is pure good.
Yeah. And somebody could have, a volunteer could have come,
oh, sure.
come along and
he
done
he could
that.
Have done that on his time off. Instead, he got
yeah.
paid by stolen money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know. I always hate to get into these arguments like, well, if we're going to have government, then they should do this. But at least he was taking branches off the road rather than
yep.
pulling someone over
That's
and hurting
true.
Them. But still, yeah, that could have,
yeah.
he's not, It's not like the world is going to fall apart if we don't have, cops going
right.
around
taking branches
hurting,
off
yeah, or hurting people in the process. So, yeah, so I think that basically statism and a lot of things that are associated with it and religion, as we pointed out before, are habits, are things that are just ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And the way the antidote to habits, which are just, basically blind
mindless.
Obedience.
Yep.
to an idea that's already in your mind, firmly rooted, is conscious thought.
Yeah, it's
right?
logical reasoning.
And any habit, breaking that habit starts with a conscious examination of what goes into that habit, why you have that habit in the first place.
Is it good
and
or is it bad?
Is it good? Is it doing you, is it helping your life or not? And do I want to continue to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's basically what I wanted to say. I think that there's real power in thinking about why we do certain behaviors and whether doing an analysis of whether they're good. And maybe even, before we were talking about emotional eating,
mm-hmm.
and I think this plays into cigarette smoking too. I mean, there are a lot of people who say that these behaviors are kind of stemming from childhood trauma or coping mechanisms that people learn very early in life. They do them as something to basically deal with emotional pain. I mean, and you could say that about many different things. Drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say about cigarettes and, people cut themselves. They want this
yep.
rush of, endogenous opioids. And, it's a way of manifesting psychological pain physically, and I guess dealing with it in some dysfunctional way.
Okay.
So I did want to get in a little bit about that too, that, maybe if you do have some of these habits and you think that it might be a good idea to break them, well, maybe it's also a good idea to get behind them a little bit and say, is this the result of something that happened to me in the past? Maybe we should unpack that a little bit, maybe see a therapist about it. I think that definitely is not a bad idea. And there's no shame in that, really. Most people don't think about those things, the origins of their habits,
your
past experiences, but...
Yeah, you would be trying to improve yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you'd be shameful of.
Yeah, exactly. It can definitely be hard to do that, because most people don't like to... I mean, there is like kind of a stigma associated with those kind of things, like with thinking that I need a therapist or something like that. But no, I mean, the reality is you're just trying to help yourself and improve yourself, and you should never feel ashamed or bad about that. So, I don't know. Anything? Did we talk about everything we wanted to say?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. Good. I thought that was a good good episode.
Cool.
And like Mike said before, habits and addictions, those are things that weigh you down. They're a ball and chain.
Yeah, they take away your resources, they take away your energy, they take away your time.
Your independence.
Yeah, they take away your, sense of self-efficacy.
Yeah.
Your sense of control.
Yeah.
Because...
You feel like you're just out of control.
Yeah, you're doing this thing because you have to, because you do it all the time, because you need to right now, not because you want to. And it's just... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very heavy habits. Or I guess habits, if they're bad, are very heavy. Bad habits. Habits you want to quit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so, well, if you have if you have recently broken a habit and you want to tell us about it, you know what? You should break your habit of not emailing us. Do it right now. And think about it. Put a plan into action and email us questions at porktherapy.com. You know you want to.
Or you could call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Indeed. Or you can even go to our website and all those things you can do from there.
Yep.
So website is porktherapy, porctherapy.com. And thank you very much for being our audience.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We certainly enjoy doing the show for you. And if you like our show, you can go to our website, hit the donate button, or send us a proposal for advertising.
That's right.
We talked about on the last episode. Just give us a little appreciation, or just send us a nice comment. We like that just as much as much as a donation. So, okay, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, because Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatterly debop, shop.